And we return this time to the subject of TikTok, adding for extra vocabulary points the term K-pop, that brand of pop music synonymous with Korea and popular throughout the world. Last time we heard about the growing influence of the TikTok video sharing site in shaping the music industry. And this time I ask our regular tech correspondent, Aisling Kelleher, about TikTok and K-pop's recent ventures into political activism. Over the last few days, there's been a bit of debate about what exactly happened at the Tulsa rally of the President of the United States. It seems to have been underattended, and people are rushing with explanations for that, including the fans of Korean pop bands and the users of the TikTok app. Do we believe either of them, Aisling?
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot because obviously on one side we have the Trump administration. And so straight away there, we have a big question mark about believability about anything that they say. So that's on one side. And on the other, we have a rationale being offered for why perhaps up to a million so-called tickets were sold to this event to a venue that can hold 19,000. So initially, it was very much Brad Pascali, the kind of organizer of this for the Trump administration, was thrilled with this event and looked like there was tremendous interest. And then, of course, the venue was about two-thirds empty. So what you began to see was this trumpeting almost on TikTok and on Twitter by these large groups, these kind of armies of K-pop fans who had really done, or claimed to have done anyway, a bit of a digital hit on the whole event. In this case, what they were doing is signing up for tons and tons of tickets, and they obviously had no intention whatsoever of going to the event. This also gained some popularity from another woman who's in her 50s here in the United States, who also put up this idea on TikTok.
Basically a Karen.
Her little video about this has been watched and viewed over 700,000 times. And this is quite a sophisticated hit because it started several days before the rally, where these armies of legions of fans went ahead, set up like fake phone numbers or used Google Voice over IP to gain a new number, quickly bought the tickets and then immediately deleted, or very soon after, deleted their posts so that the Trump administration would have no indication of what was coming.
The thing about this group of people, the K-pop fans, this is a type of pop music that looks deeply apolitical. It's very highly produced, very commercially orientated. It doesn't seem like a natural breeding ground for activism.
Yeah, I think the activism is something that is really kind of embedded in this really strong culture of fandom. The fans for the K-pop groups are extremely loyal, extremely active on social media platforms, and are very, very good at doing very rapid organization. So they are rooted in, like I said, this very dedicated loyalty to their fans, which means they really do take offense. They might even just take offense to what you just said about this kind of apolitical or very overly produced or commercial type of music. But then over the summer in particular, we're seeing a whole slew of different events that K-pop accounts on Twitter initially, and also now on TikTok, began to get involved in. So, for example, this is very much tied into the Black Lives Matter movement and different events around this. So one example would be the Dallas Police Force decided to create an iWatch Dallas app where people could, if they had seen any type of activity that they thought was maybe suspicious or something going on with any of the protests, they could upload the content using the app. So in response to this, K-pop advocates were pretty annoyed about this and felt that this was something that's a surveillance type of instrument. And they began to download the app and then just flooded with videos of their favorite idols, idols being the members of the K-pop band, to the extent that it made the app completely useless, and the Dallas police had to kind of wrap that up and stop using that. So from this initial success, we begin to see they realize that there's other targets that they might want to look at, not just necessarily police force, but also those who might be objecting to or trying to spread disinformation about Black Lives Matter. So then we begin to see a hashtag war, essentially, where the K-pop fans decided that they would begin to co-opt some of the hashtags that those on the extreme right, the alt-right white supremacists, were trying to get going, whether that's something like White Lives Matter or even All Lives Matter. And beginning again, same strategy, flooding that with videos and content related to K-pop idols. Just there's so much noise in the signal that it would eventually suppress the ability of alt-right accounts to get their message out there.
One of the effects of this has been to throw attention back onto what is K-pop itself. You know, not just people like us saying, well, what is K-pop? There's been a certain amount of pushback from African-American academics and observers of African-American culture and Black culture.
Correct. I think there's some very interesting academics out there, like Miranda Lawson, who's at the University of Tokyo, and Dr. Lori Morimoto, who's here at the University of Virginia. And they're very active on Twitter as well, drawing attention to some of the more kind of complicated issues around the kind of the appropriation of Black culture by K-pop groups, or the misappropriation of it as well. And also the kind of the way that these groups, in their tremendous loyalty to the K-pop groups themselves, do not take very kindly to people of color pointing out the problems in some of either the costumes that people wear, the type of wear that they speak, or the type of way that folks in K-pop groups, you know, style their hair, for example. And there's been numerous accounts and events over the last couple of years, you know, some of them even quite recently, of K-pop groups, you know, using blackface or speaking in a kind of like a fake African-American accent, as if it's, I mean, it's something that you try on and that's kind of like fun, without any thought or anything whatsoever about the significance and the trauma that has been done to African-American people over centuries. So there is a little bit of pushback to saying, like, yes, on the one hand, this is good because a lot of money has been raised from both K-pop groups and K-pop fans for, say, advocacy groups like Black Lives Matter. But at the same time, there is really problematic things, not only with the bands themselves, but in the fans. This is where I think academics who've been studying K-pop as a type of fandom in all its complexity over a considerable amount of time, such as Dr. Morimoto and Miranda Larson, really draw out some of the nuances here. You know, that this seemed to be just kind of like trying on this type of activism, doing it for a while, getting a lot of praise for that, and then just kind of moving on and not having to necessarily do the hard work on the ground.
Aisling Kelleher of Virginia Tech there, and next time on Culture File, Jennifer Walsh on socially distanced pride.